The question was, isn't the Hague Treaty, as I described it, something that allows international law to override our domestic protections for free speech and rights of that nature? And the answer to that is yes, and that's one of the reasons why people are so concerned about the Hague Treaty. Well, the treaty is not, the Hague Treaty is in its early stages, and one of the reasons why I mention it is because you'll see as we go through the provisions of the Cybercrime Treaty that there have been a lot of lobbying efforts on, there has been a lot of lobbying efforts on the part of computer security professionals, encryption researchers, and people of that nature to try to change the European Cybercrime Treaty and make it more palatable. And the same thing needs to be done with the Hague Treaty. The Hague Treaty either needs to be amended from where it stands now or it needs to be killed. Richard Stahl wrote a great rant about why the Hague Treaty is bad, and I recommend that people take a look at that and think about what we can do in order to either ameliorate the downsides of these international laws or kill them altogether. And let's take a look at how that happened in the process of negotiating and arguing about the European Cybercrime Treaty. Okay, the treaty is currently in its final draft form. You can look at what the treaty says at that URL that I have up there. And the treaty is, as I said earlier, one of these types of documents that requires the member nations, the signatories, to amend their or to pass local laws that make them in concurrence or in agreement with all the other signatory nations. They have to pass new laws that will agree with the provisions of the treaty. And the treaty has three basic areas in which agreement is in which we agree to agree. One is the substance, that we need to have a substantive consensus. We agree on what is a crime. We amend our laws to make sure that everything that's in the treaty that they say should be a crime is a crime in the United States, and not just in the United States, but in all the member nations of the Council of Europe. Second is a procedural consensus, that we agree that there are processes, whatever those processes may be, for the retention of data and the collection of evidence and then the disclosure of that information to local law enforcement. And finally, the third thing is the international cooperation aspect. If local law enforcement can collect the evidence, then local law enforcement can turn it over to the law enforcement agents of other nations, the nations where, for example, the crime may have had its worst effect. You want to see the site? Oh, I'm not sure if it's on Lexis, actually, so I don't really know where that would be. I don't know where it would be on Lexis. I know that's where it is on the web. Sorry. Okay, so here we have a little picture of our hero from the I Love You virus case. And he's representing everything that we're going to now agree is going to be illegal. First, illegal access. Illegal access meaning access without right. Initially, this law required every signatory nation to make illegal access, simple trespass, or exceeding authorized access illegal, just as it is here in the United States. With lobbying from other nations, the illegal access provision now allows variations on that theme as per the law that already exists in Germany. They now allow you to require either that there be some kind of damage first or that some security measure have been circumvented or something like that. That was the result of lobbying. We have illegal interception of data, wiretap or sniffing. Data interference, stealing data, erasing data, altering data, that sort of thing. System interference, denial of service. Misuse of devices. This is very controversial and was formerly a provision called illegal devices, which controls the development, possession, and use of hacker tools like scanners, exploits, password crackers, anything that is primarily designed to do the first four, illegal access, interception, data interference, or system interference. Computer-related forgery. computer-related fraud, child pornography, and those are basically things that we traditionally think of as criminal offenses. Kim? Oh, wait, hold on just a second. Kim? The question was about the misuse of devices provision, and we're going to talk about that kind of in detail later, and then if I don't answer your question, please do ask it again. Who was the other person who wanted to? Oh, okay. So now we get into a new kind of crime, maybe not here in the United States, but for most of these places, copyright. This treaty would require the signatory nations to criminalize copyright. In the United States, up until not that long ago, copyright offenses were generally treated as a civil matter. Now they're treated as a criminal matter. And what this treaty would do is it would require other nations to also create copyright laws that are punished criminally. Now, I know that most of you probably know this, but the difference between a civil case and a criminal case is a civil case is where somebody sues you for money. A criminal case is where the government pursues you to take away your liberty and you go to jail. And the treaty specifically states that member nations must pass laws that make you go to jail for copyright infringement. There's also provisions for aiding and abetting, corporate liability, and as I said, these all are laws that the signatory nations not only must pass, but also must punish with a potential sentence of imprisonment. The gentleman in the back who changed his mind and wants to ask his question again.